Welcome to Planning to Grow. This is Jeff McManus, and today we have a special guest with us. We have Martha Hill, who is a professor down at Hines Community College in Raymond, Mississippi. Martha is the chairperson of the Landscape Management Department at Hines Community College in Raymond, Mississippi. She's been at Hines since 1986, where she's been the instructor and advisor to students in the Landscape Management program. She oversees all three programs in the Landscape Management Department, including Irrigation Management, Small Engine and Equipment Repair, and Landscape Management. She holds a Master's in Systems Management from Mississippi State, also a Bachelor's in Landscape Architecture from Mississippi State, and an Associate's degree in General Studies from Copiah Lincoln Junior College. Martha, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Great to talk with you.
I'd like to mention we're on telephone tonight and interviewing Martha. And Martha, I know you have done a lot for the industry and in the state. A lot of folks may not have heard your name. You're not on the radio a lot, but tell us a little bit what you do. I know of your history, and I know the great work that you're doing with our students and the future for the state of Mississippi, and it's just tremendous on what you're doing and the products you're producing. But tell our folks that will be listening a little bit kind of what you do day to day.
Well, thanks, Jeff, for those great kind comments. I guess I'm in the classroom and not on the radio a lot, so that's why you haven't heard me on the radio. But I do teach students at Hines Community College in the Landscape Management program, and my duties involve more than just teaching. When students decide to come to Hines in some of our programs in our department, I usually interview them face-to-face to see what their goals and objectives are and make sure that they're on the right track and in helping them select the career path that they're choosing. I advise the students on the classes to take and sign them up for those classes. I'm also responsible for recruiting for our department as well as our other faculty are. And we have full-time employees, our faculty members, and adjunct faculty in our department, so my job includes managing those, making sure their paperwork's in on time and that they have everything they need to teach their classes. And, of course, there's all kinds of paperwork and reporting with the State Department of Education and also managing our budget. So my duties are a lot more than just teaching students, but the main reason I have a job is to teach students and manage them and direct them, so that's kind of what my duties include.
Well, last year you had one of your great students come up and did an intern program with us at Ole Miss, and he was fabulous. His plant knowledge was good and had a lot. Tell me a little bit what students should expect when they attend your program, and what do they typically do when they graduate?
Well, I think one of the most unique things about our program is we ensure that our students have hands-on experience when they get out of our program. Our program is a two-year technical program at Hines Community College. Some of our programs, the small engines is a one-year certificate program, and the irrigation and the landscape program are two-year degree programs. And students can expect to be outside working a lot, either in labs or classes. We also do a lot of extracurricular activities where we might put in a garden at a show or at the state fair. We always have something at the children's barnyard with the FFA students in each state fair. We do lots of things like take our students to seminars and workshops. We want the students to be exposed to as many different parts of the landscape industry as possible, and that might be in the state of Mississippi, and it might be in another state. We travel a lot. We think it's important for our students to network with the industry so that they can see what the opportunities are out there for them, how vast the landscape industry is, and just to help them make sure that the path they're choosing to go on as far as their career is concerned is what they really want to do when they get out. Another very unique thing about our program, and this is true about, we are the only community college program in the state in the landscape field, the horticulture field, that require our students to do internships. And you mentioned the student that you had with you last summer at Ole Miss. That goes back to that hands-on experience. We can teach them theory in the classroom, but until they get out and actually have to put in a landscape or figure out a grading and drainage problem or how to build a retaining wall, they really don't understand all those nice pictures they're drawing in a design or, you know, how to put a plant in the ground until they have to dig the hole or put the irrigation system in. So that hands-on experience is really a unique thing that we offer our students.
Well, I'll agree with you there. That you mentioned networking and going to trade shows and visiting, and that's extremely important to get to know your counterparts and to know what's going on in the areas of our industry. It's really important. I hope next year that you'll reserve us a person again, or hopefully somebody will come. We missed having one this year, but that your program, I could just tell from the students you had, is a great program. So keep up the good work there. I want to ask you a question here to sort of change the subject a little bit now to get away from the academics. And if you just joined us, I'd like to let you know that we're talking with Martha Hill on the phone tonight. Martha is a professor, department head over landscape management at Hines Community College. She's won numerous awards down there. There's too many to list, but one of them, she was the Educator of the Year in 2003. From the Associated Landscape Contractors of America. Most of us know that as Planet now. And that was a huge honor for you, I'm sure, out of all the people in the United States to be named that. Martha, was that a surprise to you?
Definitely a surprise. And what was even better about it, we were hosting our national competition for students in the green industry that year at Hines Community College. So to win that award at that closing ceremony was quite an experience. It was very emotional for me. I don't know how much of it was exhaustion from hosting the competition, but also just the sheer shock of getting that award. But it's quite an honor, and I have lots of great counterparts at other colleges and universities throughout the country, and Planet has certainly given us an avenue and a networking opportunity for educators, so it's been a lot of fun to be a part of that organization.
Well, folks that aren't familiar with that award, that is a high prestigious award to get, and they just don't hand that out to anybody. So we're talking to one of the best of the best here tonight in Martha. So congratulations on that. But let me ask you this. How important do you think landscaping curb appeal is to the home and the business? And, of course, I know that's sort of a softball question to you, but there's some folks that we still see in our state that really haven't bought into it. So talk a little bit about that. How important do you think it is?
Well, I think it's very important. First impressions are always important. And I think that our college campus at Hines Community College is a great example. Our president and our administration through the years knows the value of what a well-landscaped and well-maintained campus grounds can do to make people feel welcomed. You know, when a parent brings a student to or their child to a campus for the first time, they want to make sure that it's a good, clean environment and a safe environment, and good, well-planned landscape certainly portrays that image right off the bat to those people visiting for the first time. And as far as residential is concerned, I think it says a lot for the level of pride a person has in their surroundings. A well-designed, installed, and maintained landscape speaks volumes about that level of pride a person has. You know, I've always said that a well-designed landscape can be destroyed by a person who doesn't understand that design from a maintenance standpoint, and a poorly designed job can be improved by good maintenance. So I think maintenance is a key factor in that curb appeal that a home or a business has. And obviously, plants selected, you know, and used correctly in the landscape is important. Not having plants that get too large that cover up your front door, or not having a walk to the front door where your guest can get to the front door or even find the front door, that's important. I think, you know, you want to have wherever you want your guests to arrive, they need to be able to see it and get to it easily. I love placing guest parking or a wide walk getting to a front door, because it says this is where you're supposed to come when you come to my house or to my business. And I think, too, color is important. Seasonal color, you know, you don't have to have a ton of color, but just some that helps to define those key places and moves your eye, repeating colors the landscape, you know, not having just one of everything, one of every plant or one of every color all around the landscape. If you can group like plants together and group like colors together and maybe repeat that in the landscape, that certainly helps to give a landscape curb appeal.
Absolutely. Obviously, you look at landscaping as an investment, right?
Oh, most definitely. If landscaping can increase your property values 15 to 20%, I think that's quite an investment.
It is. Now, what would you say to your typical person that's getting ready to build a home, going out to a new site, and let's talk about budgeting. Let's just stick to the budgeting. What would you encourage them to make sure, or what would the pitfalls and things to make sure when they're finished that they have enough money to do landscaping?
Well, one of the first things they might consider doing is financing that initial landscape installation with their mortgage. And then, you know, eventually you'll never even realize you did that, but a lot of people don't think about borrowing enough money when they're setting up their loan for their home to pay for that initial landscape, because when you start adding hardscapes like driveways and walkways and patios and possibly arbors, those are big ticket items, not to mention the planting and good soil preparation and grading and drainage you have to consider. But maybe just thinking about, you know, looking at financing that. And I'm not trying to put people in debt, because if you can pay for it up front, that's certainly the first choice. But most people can't, you know, they can't do what they really should to justify the size house they build. Mm-hmm. I think if you build a $100,000 home and you put $5,000 worth of landscaping, you're missing the boat. Your landscaping should be, we said a few minutes ago, it increases the value 15 to 20%. So if you can put 10 to 15% of the cost of your home into the landscaping, that's really the minimum I think someone should even consider. And that really doesn't include most of the hardscape, because those are even bigger ticket items.
Sure. How many times have we seen where the homeowner gets to the end of the project, or even a commercial project? I've seen it on campuses, at a resort where I used to work. The buildings are finished. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous. And then it's kind of like, we're out of money. Okay.
Exactly.
But the first thing everybody sees when they come to your property is your landscaping. It's sort of the icing on the cake.
That's right. Right, and it again sets the tone for how much pride you have in your place, and you know, there's a psychological effect, you know, of well maintained and landscaped areas. I think that it makes us feel good about our spaces that we're in and that we use, and it says welcome to guests or to a customer that may come onto our property.
What would you encourage now from, let's say that our budget is good, we did take your advice, we have enough money set aside, maybe we don't have a lucrative budget, but we have enough money to do some type of investing outside. What are you going to encourage me as a homeowner to do? Are you going to encourage me to go to the big box stores and buy my plants, or what should I do? Which way do you think I should go?
I think the first thing someone should do is have a master plan. Sit down with a landscape designer or a landscape architect who understands the spatial layout of a site and can interview you and pull out what your needs and wants and desires are, and then pull that together in a master plan. You may not be able to afford the whole thing right off the bat, but that designer can help you phase that project so that you can afford it over a period of time if you can't do it all at one time. I think you should get a designer, a landscape architect involved in the project before you ever choose your site. Let that landscape architect help you decide if your site is conducive and to the home you want to build, and also if it oriented right as far as solar orientation. I live in a home, and it's an older home. It faces west, and I have lots of windows on the front of my house. My outdoor living area is on the side yard, not the rear yard, and it's on the north side of my house. And we never use my patio because it's dark, it's shady, it's kind of just damp out there. We'd rather be on the carport side of our house, which is the south side and southwest side. That's where our grill is. And so it just functions a lot better for us. And so solar orientation of that house, if I could do it over again, I would look for a home, if I was going to buy a pre-built home, that that the outdoor living space is on the south southwest side of the house, because I can put a I can put a deciduous tree there in the summer to shade it in the summer, and then those leaves will fall in the winter, and I can enjoy that space even when it's cold outside. The sun is still going to warm that space.
Oh.
And then put, you know, the non-high use areas like carport or a blank wall on the north side of the house where those winter winds are not an issue, and would make that place, that space, feel cold and damp, as is in the case of our home. I think too that we're looking at grading and drainage issues. That's important. I look at some homes that are, you know, built down in a hole, or there's water that pools at the front door or on their patio, and or the house floods, and you go, well, water does flow downhill. So maybe, you know, looking at grading and drainage issues right off the bat as you build your home is very important too. And then lay out the hardscapes, the driveways and the walkways, and thinking about where all that's going to go initially. And if I were to give someone advice on planting plant choices, I think if your site is large enough, you can go ahead as you're building that home and get some trees in the ground to start getting some growth on them and establish a good canopy of trees. Maybe, you know, a lot of people buy their land and are going to build down the road, and so go ahead and kind of get an idea of where you want some shade trees and get those in the ground so they'll have a good root system on and get a jump start before your home's complete.
You mentioned so many things there. I don't know what to follow up on. You got me all, you know. You hit so many buttons for me. But let me go back what I hear you saying is to get someone who knows how to lay out a land involved early. And a lot of times, what I find, Martha, is that people, landscape designers, often don't charge if they know that they're going to be involved with the whole project. They don't usually will charge at the front end. Now, some landscape architects do for their time. But usually an initial visit, you can sometimes get some consultation for free if they know that they're going to be involved with the entire project. But I think that the point that you made was extremely important, to site layout. I've gone on so many sites where there's no drainage, and I'm thinking, who laid this out? I mean, it was obviously somebody did not think about drainage and large trees. Talk about, you mentioned trees, adding trees, but talk a little bit about existing trees. People buy beautiful wooded lots in the state of Mississippi. We're blessed to have the maples and the oaks and the ashes. And then 3 to 5 years after the house is built, we see the trees having to come down from dying and so forth. Tell us a little bit what we need to be aware of when we get ready to build on our wooded lot.
Right. Well, I think one of the first things is, finding that location for your house. And if you have trees you want to save, then you've got to do everything in your power to save them, because when the contractor shows up on the job, the first thing he's going to do is probably have a bulldozer on the site.
Yep.
And the worst thing you can do on existing trees is cut soil away from that root zone of that tree, or put soil on top of that root zone, or put building materials on that root zone, or park under that shady oak tree that's on that site, because that's going to compact the soil and cut off the air and water circulation to that root zone that keeps that tree alive. I think one of the best things a homeowner can do is, if there's key trees they want to save, is put some barriers out at the drip line. If you took a vertical line from the edge of the canopy of the tree and dropped it to the ground, really roots go beyond that too. But that's a good rule of thumb to start with, where you put up some kind of barrier like this orange erosion control fence or construction fencing to keep people off of them, and then put into your contract with that builder and with his subs that if anybody's caught putting material or parking under those trees or filling or cutting under those trees, there's a fine involved, and that will speak volumes to those people who don't typically think of the value of those trees. And protect them with mulch. Put mulch underneath them to help protect them, if there's no way you can protect that canopy zone and you do have some encroachment, then mulch it so that will help to cut down on the compaction somewhat with heavy equipment or driving underneath the canopy of a tree.
What about utility lines? Where should they be routed on the site?
Underground would be great. If that's at all possible. And most properties have utility easements along the property line. So underground is great, but you've got to be careful with trenching below the canopy of those trees, too. I know when years ago the state capitol put in an irrigation system under major mature trees, and deciding where those lines should go, they basically took half of the distance between the trunks of some major trees to determine where those lines go. But routing those utilities or irrigation lines is, you know, outside that canopy of that tree is really important to protect that root zone, or go radially from that trunk with lines rather than cutting across and very close to the trunk of the tree where you're going to damage a lot of roots.
Martha, if we were to hire a contractor to do some of these things, is it safe to assume that they're going to know all these things that you've mentioned and that they're going to do these things without us having to bring it up to them?
No, I think there's, if you're talking about a contractor from a home, you're talking about the building contractor?
Building contractors, no, utility workers, even some landscapers.
Right. I think some of the first things you should do is look at their work, check their references, and ask them questions. Ask them questions if they understand how important it is to protect trees, existing trees on a site. Ask them if they understand grading and drainage. And I think one of the first things you should ask them is do they have the proper credentials as far as licensing is concerned? In the state of Mississippi, if you do installation of landscaping, you're supposed to have a landscape gardening license through the Department of Agriculture. And there are a lot of landscape folks out there who do not have that license. And some of them don't even know they're supposed to have that license.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a business license from a city. It's a license through, it's a state license exam that they have to sit for and pass to be able to receive that license. And that ensures the homeowner that contractor has the liability insurance that if something were to happen, that they have the insurance to cover the cost of that accident or whatever it might be.
I believe that's given through the Bureau of Entomology or Bureau
of Plant Industry, which is a division of the Department of Agriculture.
That's right. And it's given it in Starkville, and I believe it's four times a year. It's once a quarter.
Right.
So,
once
yes.
Once a quarter, second Tuesday of every quarter, that test is given. And but to sit for that exam, you have to have certain educational requirements. I think it's 15 hours of college credit in landscape-related courses. Or you have to work under someone for 7 years, I think it's 2 years, who is licensed through the Bureau of Plant Industry. So it's not just a test anybody can go sit for. It's a pretty tough test.
Yes, it is. You can plan on being there 3 to 4 hours to taking that test. Because you get somebody who's taken and passed the test doesn't mean that it's going to solve your problems, but you're going to get of someone who's educated probably a little bit more in some of the things that you're discussing today. Well, if you're joining us here, just joining us, we're interviewing Martha Hill by telephone, and Martha is the Landscape Management Department Chairperson and full-time instructor at Hines Community College. She's been there since 1986, and, of course, has won several awards. Has several articles published in Ornamental Magazine, Outlook Magazine, things such as Finding and Retaining Good Employees, Designing and Maintenance in Mind, and let's see. Martha, let me ask you another question. This is one I get calls on quite a bit, and I see it on campus. How do you handle heavy shade under trees? I often get questions when I go and speak at the garden clubs and so forth that, we used to have grass here, or we put grass down last year, or it lasted 2 years, but it's just the grass has slowly fizzled out. What do you do in a situation like that, and how do you answer a question with deep shade?
Well, if it's deep shade, there's not a whole lot you can do except to either mulch the area and just totally get rid of the grass, or put a ground cover that is shade tolerant under that tree, so that you don't have to try to keep growing that grass or replacing that grass. Turf grasses need sunlight, and St. Augustine is really the only grass we have that can tolerate a pretty good amount of shade, but it still needs sunlight to be healthy and thick and to help keep weed control then. I think a healthy turf is vital to shading out weeds in an area. So if your grass is weak under because of shade under a tree, then you're possibly going to have a problem with weeds in that area. So mulching, I like to mulch about 4 inches deep, and I think that our mulch rings, if you want to take the canopy of a tree or the trunk of a tree, I think the mulch rings should be two-thirds of the diameter of the canopy of that tree. Our mulch rings should be much larger than that 3-foot circle around the base of a tree, especially if there's heavy shade, because that, if the grass is thinned out and the soil is showing on top, then that's a pretty good sign that there's just a shade issue there.
Mm-hmm.
So mulching would help solve that.
That's a good point. You mentioned weeds several times, and obviously mulch helps with weeds and keeping weeds at bay. What else can homeowners do, or what do you teach some of your students on how to deal with weeds in the shrubbery beds and annual beds and seasonal, you know, the seasonal color areas?
Right. I think one of the first things is when you do bed prep and you add soil amendments, make sure you've got good weed-free soil amendments. When you're adding those amendments and you've planted mulch well, 4 inches of mulch is, 3 to 4 inches of mulch, I think, on an annual basis is very important. And then hand remove those weeds that might encroach early. Get them when they're young. When we've had such dry weather this summer, if you go out and try to pull a weed, probably right now, I know in the Jackson area, it's going to be pretty tough to pull one out and not get all the roots up. But if you can moisten that soil, hand removal will be a lot easier. But also, if you do chemical spray it, like with Roundup or some other type of weed control like that, spray them when they're young, because you're going to be more susceptible to taking up that chemical and really getting that plant, total plant roots and all, when you spray them. On an established bed, sometimes you might have to go in and do some pre-emerge herbicide. I think pre-emerge when you plant is important too. But you have to, most of the time, do that on a continual basis. It's important to do it initially. A pre-emerge is going to form a barrier at the soil line to keep those weeds, when they germinate, weed seeds, when they germinate, from pushing through and reaching the sunlight and growing. But doing that being diligent enough to do that on an annual basis, or as the schedule says on the bag, is important. And that can be costly, but that's effective as well if you can get a good pre-emerge program going. I think, too, that good selection of plant material is important as well, because even plants, shrubs and things can help shade out weeds as well.
Mm-hmm.
So don't let them get established real heavily at first, and stay on top of it at first. I think you can keep it under control real well.
I agree. I agree with what you said. Now, what about in the turf? Do you have just a general idea on if someone's trying to deal with turf on maybe an established lawn? Maybe we've purchased a house. The house is 10 or 15 years old, but we do notice there's a lot of weeds in the turf. What do you recommend, or what are you telling folks?
Well, first thing I would do is a soil test. Whether it's a new lawn I'm establishing or an existing lawn that I've inherited or purchased a piece of property and have, because that soil test is going to tell us our level of fertility, what's low and what's high, and maybe what we need to add. And if we can get the turf in a healthy state, then it will help shade out a lot of our weed problems. Some weeds are just an indicator that the pH is low, or that the nitrogen might be low, or phosphorus or potassium. So a soil test would be the first thing I would do. Correct the fertility with the right mixture that's recommended, and then choosing, if it's a new lawn, choosing a type of grass that will grow in your situation and in that soil type, especially at that pH, and then keep it watered, especially when you're first establishing it, whether you do it by sod or by seeding.
So get it on a good, healthy program and outgrow the weeds is what I hear you say.
Exactly. Aeration. If the soil is compacted, rent an aerator and just aerate that soil a couple of times a year. I did that a couple of years ago here at my own home, and it's amazing what that did, because it opened up the soil, it allowed water and air to get to the root zone, which are two vital things that plants need. need to grow, whether it's grass or shrubs.
Now, there are a lot of services in Mississippi that provide care for your lawn, and they spray pre-emergent weed control down, and then they'll come back and spray post-emergent in the summer as well. Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, if you're not willing to go out there and do it yourself or do a little homework and do it yourself, then sure, that's a good program. But it's also very doable by a homeowner to not, you know, put that money out if they really enjoy being outside. But a lot of people don't have that kind of time. So those services are definitely a good thing if you have the ability to pay for it, number one, and then if you don't have the time or energy to do those, or the expertise. Some people just don't get into plants like you and I do, so they may not be willing to go that route.
Well, that, you know, some of us want a good looking lawn, but we have other things to do and other priorities, so that that is important. What about, I want to change the subject to you on deer. Now, deer seem, you know, when we were growing up as kids, you couldn't find a deer. At least, you know, every time I went deer hunting, there was never any to be seen. But now it seems like when you turn into the subdivision, you know, it's a matter of which herd do you see first, the north side herd or the south side herd. And so what are you guys seeing for deer populations down in your area?
And well, I hear people ask the question, what do I do about deer in my yard, all the time. I have several lists in my office of plants that deer don't care for. So choosing plants that maybe deer don't like, and I'm sure you can do a search on the internet for those lists. And I have heard, and I'm so sorry I don't know the name of this, but I've heard of people using human hair, like going to beauty shops or salons and getting hair and putting that on the borders of their property. But that's something you're going to have to do on a regular basis. I've heard of putting bone meal out in some sewage sludge material, and I can't remember what the product is. I heard that several times this summer mentioned. So I'll have to do some research on that and get back to you.
Was that Milorganite?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah,
I can't remember what it was.
I like Milorganite. That works. Now, the hair, I've heard of that, but most of the people that I know that have tried it, they said it may have worked one or two times, but the Milorganite, it will work for a period of time. But, yeah, it is great because they don't like that smell.
You know what, Jeff, though, it's probably a good thing to maybe use the Milorganite for a while and then swap to something else and then go back to that. You know, it's kind of like rotating crops. They're going to get used to whatever's constantly out there. And you know, their fear factor won't be there as long. So you might need to rotate some things if there's other things that work.
That's right. Well, tell us a little bit about sustainability. That seems to be the buzzword in our industry today, much like other words have been throughout the history. What are you guys, as far as in the classroom, and what are you seeing as far as sustainability?
Well, I just attended a seminar this summer with the Mississippi Nursery and Landscape Association, and that was a big topic with a panel. And, you know, I think sustainability, I think we in the green industry have been in a sustainability mode forever because we understand more than we think we do. I've talked about some of the things that we try to convey to our students regarding sustainability, and one of those is solar orientation of your home or outdoor use areas, selecting plant material that may be compatible with others in the same area or region of your yard. If you have something that likes a lot of water next to something that can't take a lot of water, that's not being prudent in your design, and I think that has to do with sustainability because you could be wasting resources in watering or not watering. Keeping water on a site and not putting it in a swale or in a ditch or in a storm sewer system, using that water on the site to rebuild those aquifers that are on that site that you're dealing with. We're actually looking and going to talk and possibly do some things like collecting our rainwater off of our roof and using it for irrigation or maybe a water feature in our building, planting a rain garden where you have an underground storage area where if it's rained a lot, the water will collect there, and the plants that you use in that area can take wet feed or they can take dry feed if it's a drought situation. Also, I think just thinking about using organic chemicals organic fertilizers. There's a lot of new products out on the market that I think are worth looking at. We've been playing a little bit at our building with some chicken manure-based organic fertilizers, and they're actually manufactured in Monticello, Mississippi. So we've been playing around with that kind of thing a little bit, too. So just introducing that whole concept to students, I think, is important. And they can pick up any industry magazine and read about sustainability.
I think it's a big topic, and we just scratched the surface of it tonight. But it was refreshing to hear you say that we are doing a lot of the things that many of the people are just now waking up to that we've been doing for years. There are things that we can improve on, but I know even mulching leaves and things, you know, on campus, that we don't even haul a single leaf away on campus. We mulch everything there on site, and so it just goes right back into the earth. And you know what? What a great way just to keep it there and not fill up our landfills and those type of things.
Exactly. Composting and recycling. There was a lot of discussion with especially the nursery industry of, and landscape contractors as well. Anytime you plant a plant, you've got a container that plant came to that site on. What are you going to do with that container? You know, we have a recycling program at Hines Community College right there on our campus where we take plastics, cardboard and paper, and we are recycling those, and we have a baler and bundle them up and ship them to a place that's purchasing those, and all of that money that we make, which is not a whole lot right now in the state of the economy, but we are putting that back into scholarships for students and travel stipends for faculty, and just returning that back to the students that we have and faculty on our campus, which I think is a great thing.
I do, too. That's great. Well, Martha, we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join us tonight for this interview. Is there anything that you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
You know, one thing we talked about a few minutes ago, and I jotted myself a note, we were talking about landscape contractors having that license. I had someone knock on my door today, and he saw a large tree in our backyard, and he said, do y'all need anybody to cut any limbs out of your trees in the backyard? And my husband answered the door, and he told him no, and the guy got in his vehicle and drove off. And I asked my husband, I said, what's the name of his company on the side of his truck? Is he licensed? You know, did you check for his license? And he didn't have a sign on his front, on the side of his door, and we didn't. He drove off before we could get a card from him. But I bet you money that guy was not licensed to do tree work in the state of Mississippi.
Yeah.
And I want to caution people about, you know, contractors. Just be smart when you hire a contractor to do anything. Make sure they're qualified to do the work. And if they have the right license, then they'll have, you'll be insured that hopefully they know what they're doing and that they've got liability insurance in case something happens. I'll hate for someone cut a limb out of my backyard and get it go through my roof and then them not have the money to pay for the repair of that roof. So I just want to caution people that it's not just landscape installation, it's tree work, it's just construction of any kind. Make sure the people you hire are qualified to do the work and running their businesses legally.
That's right. That's a good point. Do you have to have name on the side of the truck in Mississippi?
I don't think you have to have the name on the side of your truck, but if you have any kind of printed material, where a business card or a sign on your truck, that you do that type of work, whether it's landscaping or tree surgery or chemical application, weed control or pest control, you have to have a license because that's a form of advertising. And
that's
if you're
right.
charging for your services, you have to have a license.
That's right.
So it's important to quiz. And plus, if someone has the license and they've gone through the trouble of taking those tests, you know they have some knowledge because they've had to pass the test in order to get the license to begin with.
That's right. Well, the reason I had asked, I just did a follow-up on that, I know some states, I know Georgia does require that, but I didn't think Mississippi did. But if we do our due diligence on that, we need to ask the questions and not to be afraid to ask for proof of liability insurance. And you know what I found? That guys that have it, the guys that have to pay for it every year, they're happy to provide it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's as simple as sending an email. They just call their insurance carrier and have them shoot an email to wherever it is. And they, because they pay so much for it, they are tickled to death to show it off. So don't be afraid to
ask. And I think that shows a level of professionalism for that company as well. It shows that they are operating their businesses legally, they have pride in what they do, and they understand that that sets them apart from the mow, blow, and go operations, as I call them, or the tree hackers that are, guys who this is like a sideline business for them. They have a regular job, but they're just doing tree work on the side. So I think it sets the people apart who do have the license and are willing to go the extra mile to get the training and
That's
education
right.
to get the license.
You know, one of the things we require on the campus at Ole Miss is we require them to have at least somebody on the staff to be a certified arborist as well with ISA. And
right.
we have found that has helped tremendously just with the job knowledge. And we all start speaking the same language because, you teach this, that it's a whole different language when you start talking about trees and any of our stuff.
Exactly. There's so many. We talked about licensing in Mississippi and what's required in the state, but there are some national certifications and licensures that are out there that are fantastic. And Planet has some of those. The Irrigation Association has those, as well as the International Society of Arboriculture. So you've mentioned some really good ones.
Well, Martha, thank you for joining us today. If you joined us late, please go back and listen to our podcast. But we've had a great guest with us tonight, Martha Hill. She's a teaching instructor and department head at Hines Community College in Raven, Mississippi. She's been our guest for the last half hour here, and a lot of good information. And she's one of the ones producing the Leaders for Tomorrow and some of those that you have had experience with in Mississippi that know what they're doing. She has been the one who's been teaching them. So, Martha, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you real soon.
Great, Jeff. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.